Save big money on your next upgrade now at Menards. Some things never go out of style, like tile from Mohawk. You can count on the durability, easy maintenance, and timeless beauty of tile. With over 350 ceramic, porcelain, mosaic, and glass tiles to choose from, Mohawk Tile provides long-lasting charm in any space. Visit the store and Menards.com to see all of our great deals going on in our weekly flyer. Save big money
at Menards. I want winners. I want people that want to win.
All right. I want to firstly apologize for us not going Sunday night after the Super Bowl. I was just not feeling well. So I told Rod, hey, can we postpone? That is my bad. Rod was ready to go after Super Bowl LIX. But we're here now. I feel a lot better. And awesome. We are going to talk about a bunch of different things, not only with the 49ers, but also with Super Bowl. What does LIX stand for? 59?
Mm-hmm.
So Super Bowl 60. So the Bay Area got 50 and 60?
Yeah. That's awesome.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. All right. So the first thing on the table, even before the Super Bowl, that we got to talk about was Deebo Samuel asking for a trade. Supposedly, he asked for a trade at the end of the season meeting, and the 49ers said to he and his agent, go try and find one, which I'm not exactly sure what that means. Like, go try and find one, and then they're going to find one, and the Niners are going to go, no, we don't want a seventh round pick for you. It's got to be better than that. So There's going to be that dance. But Deebo is our guy. He is one of our favorite players to watch. It is unfortunate what has happened these last couple years with the injuries and just the off years, especially after all that he gave for, you know, the 20 and 21. But what do you think? Is this frustration? Is this Deebo seeing what is it going to happen to him eventually? He's seeing, you know, the hierarchy in the wide receiver room. Like, what do you think is behind all this?
I would think that it's a combination of things. I'm sure there's frustration coming off of this season with, you know, the record and, you know, basically even his performance. But also, he didn't have any guaranteed money left. So I think that plays a part because I just don't know if the 49ers have any willingness to, you know, revisit that. So when you add those two things together, I believe that that is how we get where we're at. And again, I know fans, you know, seem to handle these things like a spurned lover, but I don't see this at all as like Deebo. There are fans who really believe that Deebo doesn't have a market, which I couldn't agree with more. I mean, less, honestly. I can see off the top of my head when I first saw this, it was like five teams that I knew would want to be in on him if they possibly could, and even more if he somehow found himself a free agent, which I doubt that the 49ers would just outright release him. But yeah, I think it's going to be, you know, I don't think that Brock's deal is going to, that there's going to be much drama around that. So we had to figure out a way to create some sort of drama for the offseason. And it was delivered to us early, it seems. So yeah, it's never a dull moment in Ninerland.
So we've been talking about this all season long, which is the writing seems to be on the wall with him. Not only was it the original extension, which was only 3 years versus every other wide receiver of value getting 4 years plus, and then Ayuk's deal dwarfing his deal after last year's negotiations. And then, like, he's getting worse. At least his numbers are looking worse. Him running the football is no longer the insane gotcha play that it has been for whatever reason. I don't know if they're not blocking it as well. I don't know if it's no longer a surprise. I don't know if it's him, whatever it is, that play, those plays have not been working of late. But every time I talk to people about this, or every time I mention this, they kept saying, oh, Niners aren't going to take a cap hit. Niners aren't going to take that cap hit. And I'm just like, okay, but it's pretty clear that this is no longer the rosiest of relationships. And it sounds like the Niners are going to take a cap hit just for the sake of this dude being off of the team.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, that is unfortunate, but I always looked at that deal as a win-win for both teams. I mean, for both sides, in that they didn't have to invest as much money as they might have. But if we look at how the market has shaped up, it ended up being a good deal for them because, you know, you mentioned the BA deal, but that, you know, in context is that you have to recognize the fact that the BA deal was done after the Justin Jefferson deal and Debo's deal was done prior to that. So you want, the market was clearly reset by the JJ deal and Brandon Ayuk's deal. You know, it speaks to that. And I think Debo is going to get I don't know how long a deal you would give him because of, you know, he's taken a lot of wear and tear and he has not performed at previous levels, especially this year. Mm-hmm. So I think the other team, the team that gets him will probably get be able to sign him to a below market value deal, but whatever he gets is more than $16 million non-guaranteed that he would be scheduled to make this year. So, and then the Niners, like, you know, people talk about, you know, post and pre June 1, it's going to be a $31 million cap hit regardless of how it goes. The difference is if they were to release or trade him before June 1st, it's going to be a $31 million dead cap hit all this year. If they do it after, it's broken up. It's, you know, basically something like 10 this year and 20 next year. Mm-hmm. So it's six one way, half a dozen the other. It just depends on how you want it taken. So it really, I mean, it seems like it is the handwriting is on the wall. Now the question is going to become what someone is willing to trade assets for in a situation kind of like the BA situation, in a situation where clearly the 49ers want out of the Debo Samuel business. So why would you then, like I've argued all last offseason, why then, regardless of how you value Debo, why would you make a Godfather offer if you know and they know that they want out the business? So like that nonsense that, you know, Mike Silver was talking about the 49ers wanting two ones for BA, that's nuts. Why? Why would I do that? If I'm, you know, and that's it's a continuing frustration with me with fans, and I get it. They're emotional, but they never look at the other side of the deal. Like I was, there was a chat in one of the groups today talking about Jacksonville trading the 5th pick for Debo and the 11th pick. Well, if you're Jacksonville, why would you do that when you could sign T. Higgins or Chris Godwin for nothing and still make your 5th pick? So again, you have to just look at it from both sides, and it just doesn't make any sense for to think that the 49ers are going to get a haul for Debo Samuel. In my opinion, I could be wrong, like I was about the Super Bowl, but it doesn't make any sense to me why anybody would you know, back up the truck to trade for Debo Samuel at this point.
Yeah, I mean, the Niners would be lucky drafting him on anything before day trading for a draft pick anything before day three, I think.
I would think, you know, and maybe you get multiple picks But or you get something like a, I think it's going to come down to something like a third or less this year and something in day two or three the next year. And you'll end up sending something back, like a mid-round something or another, either this year or next year. I just don't think it's going to be this, you know, that you're going to be looking about, you know, it's like going to be a cache of picks that you're going to look back on and say, we really, you know, we really got over on. I just don't think so.
The only way that happens is when you have leverage in the deal, and the Niners don't have leverage in this deal
because they clearly don't want him anymore. That, and that's the big thing, is it's not like, you know, they don't want to pay him. And, you know, we've already seen this show. We know how big a mess Debo can make. And I just don't think, another thing, I just don't think that the 49ers can afford another offseason like they had last year, where there's just this consternation and what's going to happen with BA, or in this case, Debo. I think they want to, I really believe they want to get Brock signed, and then they want to move forward as quietly as possible into next season. I just don't think that they want to have this drag on again.
Aren't so we know George is coming up, and what's Warner's deal? Is Warner also coming up?
I think he is next year. I can double check, but like, it sounds like they are, if news reports are correct, they are in the process of, you know, renegotiating with George, which would be good for him. I didn't see that as being in the cards last year. Mm-hmm. I thought that, you know, I thought it was going to be, we were starting to move towards a place where, you know, all of these guys would be, you know, moving on. I don't think Juice is back. He had to take a pay cut last year to stay. I don't know if he would do that again. Yeah, Fred is next year, because last year was a the 27 is a void year. So he will be looking for an extension next season.
Okay. Interesting. So that is something that is, you know, we'll be talking about it for a couple months here, where he lands. I'm just going to miss him. He was, you know, he was that playmaker for the 49ers. He was not that same playmaker the last couple years, but there was just always that chance. You're like, oh, he's got the ball out on a screenplay. What is he going to do? And, you know, it was just that chance, that option for a big play coming out of him that you always were just like wide-eyed. And I'm sure defenses were wide-eyed as well when they saw that. But
he had a very good game, one of those last games of the season. And I think it is a combination of things. I don't think that he has diminished, you know, so far that he can't be a great playmaker. The offensive line is also a question, but the one thing, you brought this up last season, that was a very, very astute point, is that, you know, the lack of a deep threat.
Oh yeah.
It shrinks the field, and it's, there's all this congestion in the middle where, you know, he's able to kind of create these big plays. Now he's got all these people there that he has to run through.
They're still going to have the same problem this year, because they did not draft anybody last year who could go over the top, or at least anybody that they're willing to play.
Cowan, which is like a candidate, but he couldn't get Dynamite, couldn't get him off the bench last year.
I know. So this is going to be something that we're going to be following. I'm actually intrigued if you believe there's five teams or so that are going to be in the Debo market, maybe that does push the pickup a little bit more than I was thinking. If you're out there and you need a receiver and somebody who could actually make a play. You know, he's not the fastest guy. He doesn't have the best hands either, but he's tough as hell. And he's going to bounce off of guys, and he's going to fire up your offense. And I would love to see him have a really big year next year, even if it's not with us, just because I'm a fan of his. So really that, like him, that'll be interesting. All right, let's talk about Super Bowl. I said on this show a couple weeks ago that I thought the Eagles were the better team. I thought if all things were equal when it just came down to line of scrimmage, I thought the Eagles were the tougher team. And the only worry I had was Mahomes just pulling something out of his rear end. And the Eagles got out so far ahead that the Mahomes factor wasn't a factor at all. No. So I was, you know, I'm not an Eagles fan or anything, but, you know, Jalen Hurts has had his share of negativity. Mm-hmm. We talked about some of the flaws in his game a couple weeks ago with just his inability sometimes to pull the trigger, a little conservative. He made one bad throw, which in the end wasn't even a bad throw because it was like a really good punt, and that was it. And he had a really, really good football game. And I thought I was kind of happy to see that just because of the naysayers. You know, people are so you prop somebody up so quickly and then you kind of knock them off that pedestal just as fast. And, you know, Hurts loses the Super Bowl. And then last year, the Niners were clearly better than the Eagles and they showed it. And it was almost like, hey, you know, we're still really good and we're going to, you know, we're going to come back in that second year after the Super Bowl. And that's really the blueprint for the Niners, which is why I liked seeing them winning that Super Bowl, because to me it said, this is how you do it. You know, maybe that year after the Super Bowl, it's really hard because you go so deep into the season and expectation is so high. You play that hard schedule, and then you do have that break year. And if the Niners can come back hungry like the Eagles did this year, I think the Niners are going to be a good team.
Well, that's the blueprint is the Eagles' blueprint. Now, I just don't know how closely they're willing to follow it. I mean, the offensive line is going to continue to be a problem, and their offensive line is a strength of their team. They got super young on defense, and those picks hit last year. They took Mitchell and DeJean one right after each other, and you know, their season really flipped this year. They started 2-2. Their season really flipped when they decided they were going to go ahead and let those young dudes play. And that's what I would love to see with the 49ers. You know, we haven't really talked about the whole Myles Garrett thing. Great player.
Oh, but, we'll talk about that near the end of the show for sure.
But the thing of it is I am an advocate, and I have been for the last several years, of the 49ers infusing this roster with young talent. We can't keep signing 30-something replacement level players. If you want to have replacement level players, then fine. Let's get some undrafted free agents or draft some guys and develop them, and you know, let them take their lumps to be you're gonna have them on cheap contracts for 4 years. Let's do that rather than recycling retreads through no disrespect to Malik Collins and Mr. Jordan Elliott and Gross Matos. Hey, man, that's fine, but it's time for us to stop, you know, chasing this window. If it happens, it happens, but we can't keep, you know, signing these old dudes and trading away draft picks to get other old dudes. You're just delaying the inevitable. You look at all these teams that were in the Final Four this year, all of them have a strong influx of young players, young good players on their roster. And, you know, I've been screaming it at the 49ers have one solid lineman on either side of the ball under the age of 25. And they drafted him last year. Mm-hmm. So, again, you need to – and look at the Eagles – you know, not so much the offensive line. The offensive line is pretty – long in the tooth. I'll give you that. But the defensive line is going to be a problem for years to come. I mean, they have just good young players all over their defense. And the 49ers don't have good young players really anywhere. I mean, the safeties, okay, if you want to do that, that's fine. Green is fine. And maybe I'm wrong, but I just don't see any of those dudes being real, real difference makers. They're solid players, and you need solid young players, but you also need dudes that are dynamic. Like, DeJean is dynamic. Jalen Carter is dynamic. N'Kobe Dean is dynamic. That dude, Bron, that they picked up, you know, dude who was wasting away on the Saints bench, I don't know how that happens. He's an all-pro after he gets there. Again, a young dude. We need a bunch of young dudes, I believe, to, you know, and maybe that does not pay dividends next year. But like you said, if we had followed that path last year, maybe we would be in a position that those young guys would have. They would have took their lumps this year.
Mm-hmm.
And they would be in a position to really contribute next year. And that's what I mean. If you don't bite the bullet and do it at some point, you're just delaying the inevitable. And you're going to end up at a place where you got a bunch of old dudes and you have to, you know, I would hate to see us have to completely reboot, because I believe we are still in a window where we can simply retool and be a good football team. But the longer you delay, you end up putting yourself in a position where it ends up being a full rebuild. If you wait 2 years and Christian is, you know, and George and these guys are starting to age out.
To be fair, though, wouldn't you say that they kind of did that with the secondary? Some of it was out of necessity, but they did play. They had to play some of their younger guys at secondary in the secondary. True.
I would say that, but again, I can't see it anywhere else. I mean, the linebackers, you know, we're gonna either re-sign Dre, which I would be happy to see. But again, there's really, and I'm not saying they haven't done it, because the fact that Beal hasn't worked out or Winters hasn't necessarily worked out is not necessarily their fault. I mean, but at some point. Again, another argument I've been making all week is that everybody talks about Kyle when they say the offensive line isn't this. And any personnel decisions seem to be placed on Kyle's plate. And, you know, he's like a meat shield for Lynch. When does he take – since he is the one who actually shops for the groceries, that is his, you know, job description. When does he start to be held accountable for the
good,
fact –
good cop, bad
for,
cop.
For McKivitz and for Burford and for the fact that Brendel is here a year too long. Mm-hmm. And all of these decisions, like I said, that Latu and Willis didn't work out. That, you know, go down the line that Drake Jackson was a miss. I mean, all of these decisions, according to the way it was sold to us when they started this journey, was that Lynch was responsible for the 60 man, the 90 man, the 65 man, and the, you know, 53 man rosters, and Kyle could deploy them however he wanted. So if that's the case, then Lynch should be being held accountable for the fact that, you know, we are an aging roster. Yeah. I think.
Well, going back to the Super Bowl, it was not a very competitive game. There's a couple things that I found really interesting about that game, though. For the first time, now I watched. You know, Chiefs are on a lot, so you get to see a lot of football.
Mm-hmm.
They just kind of play to the level of their opponent for the most part. You know, they would be really up for the big games, and then, you know, they'd sleepwalk against Denver and then, you know, and then win. And one of the things about this game was the Eagles were able to do anything that they wanted and not have to blitz. They were just rushing the passer with their front, and Mahomes was running for his life. Like, that was first and foremost. So when you don't even have to bring people and you get this guy, you know, kind of running around, one, you can kind of spy him a little bit better because he is great at getting out of the pocket and being sneaky and picking up 6 and 10 and 12 yards down the field. But also, as he's doing all of that moving around, your defense is kind of, you know, behind the front four. You can just sit and watch him. And so this is what I wanted to bring up was the Cooper DeJean interception. So first play of the game, Mahomes is slick, right? He looks like he's going to throw a wide receiver screen. So he looks directly to his right. And then he no looks it like kind of towards the middle on a short play. And I was like, oh, look at this dude throwing the no look pass on the first play of the game. So then on the DeJean interception, he rolls out to his right and he's trying to look DeJean off. DeJean actually dekes Mahomes into throwing it in the exact place that he wanted to. And he actually set Mahomes up for that interception. And I thought, man, Fangio has these guys ready. They knew all of the tricks. You're not going to stop Mahomes completely. They did a great job. But I was just like, man, they were so ready for everything that Andy Reid and Mahomes were doing. And also, when there's no threat to run the football, if you're a good defense, you could play off of that. And the Chiefs didn't even try. They weren't even trying to pretend that they had any sort of running game whatsoever. The short pass game and the screen game was their running game. And I just thought that that was a fascinating sort of chess game between Fangio and Reed. And I was happy to see him get that win after, you know, whatever it was, 13 years or 12 years before when he was in that building. And they escaped with a loss, that, you know, a game that they could have won. So I was very happy for Vic, and I was just very impressed at how Philadelphia played Mahomes. Not to say that any old defense can go, oh, we're going to play them how Vic played them. You have to have the players. You have to have, you know, the just, you know, everything working out for you. But that was, I just thought that that was brilliant. Like, just that one pick, I was like, gosh, like Mahomes is trying everything to look this guy off of the receiver he wants to go to. And instead the DB dekes Mahomes into throwing it where he wants. I just thought that was fantastic chess match. And the Eagles, Eagles won this one. Like, there was no ifs, ands, or buts about this game. We have a definitive Super Bowl champion.
Absolutely. And it was, it finally, you know, the chickens kind of came home to roost. And, you know, you call me a Mahomes apologist, but the two times he's lost in the Super Bowl, it has been because of the offensive line. Tooney kicking out the guard, kicking out the tackle, you know, it was a yeoman's job. But the fact of the matter is, they got exposed. I mean, and they had been, it had been smoke and mirrors all year with the offensive line. And they finally, you know, they finally got Pacheco back, which I don't think he was right when he came back. But then they got Hollywood back and Worthy had developed. So it looked like, I thought, you know, people were still, were talking about what was happening in October and November, but I've been watching the Chiefs. I've watched the Chiefs every week and they just continue to get better and better and better. The offensive line, it got better than it was, but it still wasn't good. And that was their only hope. Their only hope was going to be that, and I think I said that the last show, is that the only hope that they had was that they could, the offensive line could hold up enough to where Patrick could get into a rhythm quick game. Well, that didn't happen because, like you said, they were able to get home or get tremendous pressure with just four. And then the second part of that, you also alluded to, is that their DBs were playing super aggressive. Mm-hmm. On the back end, they did not just sit in a cover three shell and just let him, you know, give him targets. They were super aggressive and jumping everything. I mean, it was crazy. There were several passes that were nearly picked off, and you know, people that I was watching Super Bowl, oh, that was a bad. Well, no, it wasn't a bad pass. The pass would have hit if that DB hadn't, you know, jumped the route. And that was what they were dealing with. There was no protection up front. The DBs play lights out. It was just so all credit due to the Eagles and to, you know, I get it as 49er fans, you want to make this about the Chiefs. And but it was not necessarily, you are the offensive line, yes, it was not a deficiency necessarily in the Chiefs as much as it was a dominant performance by the Eagles on both sides of the ball. Well, definitely on the defensive side of the ball, dominant, but the Chiefs did what I thought Spags would do, was he was going to make Jalen Hurts beat them. And yep. Saquon really did not get off.
25 for 50 some odd, or 26 yeah. for 59 or something like that.
So that was what I thought would have to happen, is they would take Saquon away and then Jalen Hurts would have to beat him. And like you said, outside of one pass, he did. He passed well, and then several times he gave me flashbacks of Russell Wilson where they would be in man and they would just leave the center wide open and he would just take off. And again, like I used to talk about way back in the We Want Winners days, man, those plays break your back. There were so many times when, you know, our defenses were really good and we would do everything right and have it defensed up perfectly. And Russ would just run down 15 yards, first down. And
sliding, flicking the ball to the referee. God. And I'm just like, I hate this dude so much.
It just breaks your heart. I mean, and Jalen Hurts did it. He did all of that. And like I said, I'm not necessarily, no more than like Patrick Mahomes. I'm not going to lie. I do root for greatness. I am enamored with dudes that are that far ahead of their competition. But I also like that narrative. You know, like you said, Jalen Hurts, you know, is like the trash can man. And it's not unfair that, you know, I heard a lot. Bomani Jones said it a lot all season, that Jalen Hurts is the governor of that offense. He is the guy. They're only going to go as far as Jalen Hurts is going to be able to take him. And his conservatism and unwillingness to, you know, throw the ball had been an issue with their offense, but it wasn't yesterday.
Yeah. Did you listen to Simmons and Sal yet?
I did not.
Okay, there's a funny joke, because they said that while they're in New Orleans, they were hanging out with Jeff Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And Jeff Saturday was talking about the Chiefs offensive line and just what you said, where you had to move the guard to the tackle. And they were basically, you know, trying to get the tech, you know, the right term, you know, he's the football guy terms, like, okay, so is this really, how hard is this really for this guy? And he's like, well, completely different positions, short arms, blah blah blah, it's really, really hard. And then Sal said, he didn't actually say this to Jeff, but he was like, what Jeff should have said was, it's like going from the broadcast booth directly to the sidelines.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, but the Niners have this same problem, right? Which is, you know, they draft Pooney and he was really good at guard. And yet it's almost like, that's great, but the top position that you're going to need to plan for is left tackle, and he's not going to play that position. And so it just made me like think, like, oh man, like, you know, teams of yesteryear And they actually showed this on a graphic at the game, which is like
crazy.
The first Packers Super Bowl, the size of the lineman average size was like 6'3", 245. And today it's like 6'5", 330 or something like that. And so, you know, the Niners used to always in the 80s, they would have these nimble offensive line and, you know, they'd be able to chip and do all these things. And today it just doesn't work that way. And, you know, these beasts coming off the edge and stuff. So, you know, that arm length is definitely helpful when you got like a Bosa coming at you, and because he can close the distance so quickly on you. So it's just nuggets like that I find very interesting in this giant chess match. And you think about it as a normal fan, you go, what do I care if this dude's arm length is, you know, 2 inches less than this other guy? It's like in this game, the inches actually matter. And you know, in situations like that. So I thought that was interesting. Anyways.
And there was already talk. There was already talk at the end of last season about kicking Pooney out to right tackle, which again, you know, he played it in college, but still, I don't know, like you just outlined, I don't know that he physically is your best option as a tackle. I mean, it's at the NFL level, it's hard, man, if you are a squat, you know, short arm guy to play in, play out, go up against these, you know, like you say, these fast, you know, pterodactyl-like dudes coming at you. You have to, you know, you really need to be. And I guess Trent is a shorter guard by tackle by today's standards, but he's like a phenomenal athlete.
Yeah.
You really need to have either or. And we'll, there's one guy in particular who's like the guy I want us to draft. That is the kind of the knock on him, but it's like apples to, you know, to whatever would be a close to an apple. But yeah, you really do need the guys who the measurables at some positions really do matter.
All right, so I was gonna save this for the end, but let's bump this up because you brought him up, Myles Garrett wanting out. And I was, not that I was talking to Tim Kawakami, but I was listening to, I was listening to Kawakami's podcast. And this would have been a couple of weeks or maybe a week ago.
That would have been huge, Russillo. Like, oh, I was talking to Tommy.
and so then he says right at the end of the podcast, he says to Barrows, oh, it looks like there's going to be somebody asking to be traded, a pass rusher. He didn't say who. And I don't even know if he knew it was Myles Garrett. So I just listened to that news that podcast, then the news comes out that Garrett wants out, and I just tweeted at Kawakami. I was like, you know what you said on the podcast, and he retweeted me and he said, yeah, what I was thinking, but I didn't actually know that it was going to be Garrett. I just heard that somebody was going to be out there. So you're talking about Myles Garrett. Everybody wants somebody like him. He would be the, you know, at his age, I don't know if he's the number one pick in the draft, but he is what you would actually give up your top pick. Like if the Niners were like, hey, we got number 11, we'll like you, as a fan, you're like, yep, that makes a lot of sense to us. And Cleveland might say, good, but we even want a little bit more. And then you kind of have to figure that out. But could you imagine pairing he and Bosa together?
Yeah, it would be awesome. But again, as I talked about earlier, I just don't think the Niners are number one. I definitely don't think they have the best offer. Because like you talked about, Garrett is the type of player that I can't imagine that any of those final four, I guess maybe you would say the Eagles because their defensive line is so strong. But I know the Bills or the Ravens or not whoever the Ravens, not the Ravens. I don't even know about KC. But anyway, those good teams in like Detroit and those ilk of teams that are right there, they would definitely trade 2 first-round picks for Myles Garrett. Because number one, when you're a good team, two firsts are really like 2 seconds, because I mean, you're talking about if you're drafting 30th or 32nd, you know, okay, I would do that and something. And because he is a difference maker for somebody that is, you know, a step away. If you made it to the second week of the playoffs, you know, Myles Garrett is a type of player who could, you know, put you over the, put your team over the top. And kind of like you talked about here with Bosa, you look at Detroit, if you put him with Hutchinson, with already what they've all got going, and they've got such young players already all over the place. They, and Hutchinson is young. So, I mean, it's like you're adding a vet to a really young defense. That's a place where I would see that if, you know, if Cleveland decides that they're even going to trade him. I mean, because as we know that, you know, the NFL is not really like the NBA, where when a guy requests a trade, I mean, they could just say no to it and keep on moving, because the CBA is so, you know, punitive in terms of like holding out. I mean, I don't think since the last CBA has been signed, I don't think we've had one NFL player hold out, because it's just, you know, it's just so punitive. But yeah, he is definitely a difference maker in the right spot. Well, he's a difference maker anywhere, but I think the type of teams that would be looking for trade in him are not really, I don't think it would really be teams in the middle of the pack. Or maybe, I don't know. You just never know when there's 32 teams what people are thinking. But if it were me, and if I weren't like, if I didn't feel like my hand was like, I could, you know, reach out and touch the Lombardi, I don't know that I'd be willing to, you know, mortgage the farm for a 30-year-old defensive end.
So people remember Shanahan's first ever draft. The Niners held the second pick, and Myles Garrett was the clear number one pick in that draft. So they were already working with, you know, once he's off the board, then you're sort of like, okay, now what do we do? And then the Bears traded up with the Niners that, so that they could draft Mitchell Trubisky. That left the Niners Solomon Thomas. Now, there were some tremendous players in that draft. Mahomes is in that draft. Christian is in that draft. George is in that draft. The Niners' second round pick is old Rube Foster. He was in that draft. But, you know, that was a draft of like record and luck, and I don't remember exactly why. I sort of felt like we were like the worst team in the league. I don't remember why we were the second worst, but that's how close they were to getting him the first time. So there is, you know, I'm sure there is going to be interest on their end, but it comes down to, again, what are teams willing to give up? And the 49ers, I can't see them. I could see them giving up this year's first round pick. Adding more first round picks to that bounty, that's where it gets a little harder. And plus, they're a little shell shocked still from the Trey Lance trade. So I think that would also stop them from really competing for the best offer for Myles Garrett.
And I would add that there are three potentially difference making tackles in that top 11 picks. I just don't see how, unless history says there's never been two tackles drafted in the top 11. There are three there. I just don't see how the 49ers can. And now Simmons is one of those three. And we can get into draft stuff later, but he's coming off a patella injury. So I don't know that I would draft him. He kind of seems like, I mean, he's an uber talented player, but he seems like a balky special. I don't know that I would do that. So you're talking about, you know, I don't think we could redshirt him, but I think that Banks and Campbell are both blue chip players. And if the 49ers can get one of them, that's the pick. You have to, I think, walk away from that with this pick with a tackle of the future. And if you can't get one of them, then fine. You go to the best player available. But then there's edges up there. I just think you have to walk away with a blue chip lineman. I don't see any other way. You see, I'm at the point that I'm savvy enough about this internet or the social media stuff to know that anybody, like even Barrows and Mayoko, who are doing these mock drafts and they're drafting corners and
tight ends, Penn State guy.
that shit right there is clickbait. That's all that is, because there's no way in hell that you can't walk away. They can't walk away with that 11th pick without a lineman. The need screams out, and it's not like a situation with Solomon Thomas where you take a player at a position of need, even though it was a reach. Which again, I was having a conversation a couple weeks ago about bust, and I'd like to have that conversation with you at some point. It's not appropriate, but I'll just tease it. Solomon Thomas is considered a bust, but why would he be considered a bust when he didn't ask to be picked at the second pick? They picked him there, but he's turned out to be a solid player who was just overdrafted. Mm-hmm. Cleveland Farrell is another guy. He was taken fourth by the Raiders. He is a solid player. He didn't ask to be drafted up that high. He's a good pro. So what makes a player a bust from the player standpoint? I definitely believe those were both bad draft picks by the teams, but I think the player being labeled a bust is kind of unfair. But that's a conversation for another time. But
there are some busts I would call.
Oh, obviously.
I would call Jamarcus Russell, no matter if he was the first pick or the 10th pick, he was mm-hmm. an absolute bust.
Ryan Leaf.
And you know, the Jamarcus Russell thing is like, hey, we're going to send you this tape and we want you to watch the tape. And he's like, okay. And they come back and they go, did you watch the tape? He's like, oh, yeah. They didn't put nothing on the tape.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. So yeah. That is the kind of stuff for Solomon Thomas, like asking anybody to be drafted onto a, you know, 4-12 team or whatever, with a brand new coach and no quarterback and all that. Like, he was not, and I think that's why he was picked, is because they figured he had sort of the aptitude to deal with a lot of the nonsense that was going to happen, being such a high draft pick for them. You know, you could look down the line, you know, yeah, in hindsight, you know, Patrick Mahomes should have been the number one pick in that draft. Mm-hmm. But other players, you know, Mitchell Trubisky. Trubisky did not turn into a top quarterback. That dude's still hanging on, backing up teams. Leonard Fournette, you know, they drafted a running back very high. Corey Davis, wide receiver, went 5.
Well, like, Deshaun Watson was in that draft.
Deshaun Watson was in that draft.
Apparently Kyle wasn't even looking at quarterbacks. Did you remember the whole master plan was that he was waiting a year because he was going to get Kirk Cousins
draft. Yeah, of course.
He's going to get Kirk Cousins.
And so we had to deal with the greatness of Brian Hoyer for that year.
But right. Yeah, you know, again, Thomas, they're talking about maybe he comes back here because he's ended up being a solid pro, a perennial, you know, a Walter Payton nominee. So a solid dude, you know, solid in the community.
Like more than solid. Like this dude is like world class kind of dude.
Yeah, I mean, Stanford, you know, so, I mean, he is, but so, again, it just frustrates me that he gets labeled a bust when he was just put in a situation that, like you just outlined, it was going to be an uphill battle for him to pay off that pick. So, yeah, there are a lot. Unlike that draft, which there were, but none of those dudes, because I am not gonna, you know, fault Kyle too much, because nobody was on Patrick Mahomes like that, you know, going into that draft. Nobody mm-hmm. thought, well, this guy could be the greatest quarterback of all time.
Look at this draft. just being a quarterback for a quarterback starved league has Shedeur Sanders and Cam Ward, you know, it up there, and
Jackson Dart.
and last year, you look at those quarterbacks last year, Shedeur Sanders and Cam Ward, they're definitely behind last year's top five. And so that just shows you it's a quarterback starved league. And even at that point,
they're both probably above Bo Nix.
Right. But even in 2017, you had Patrick Mahomes there, and he wasted all the way until 10th. That showed you, because if he was a B, if they thought he was an A-, he would have been the top pick in the draft. Right. And they thought it was a B+, so he was in the top 10. All right, a couple of quick things before we get out of here. Gus Bradley, what'd you think about that hiring?
I don't know much. I know he's coached very good defenses. You know, it seems like it's a scheme fit, because it is, you know, pretty much the same defense as, well, who's the guy? Dan Quinn ran in Seattle. And those are all kind of offshoots of the Fangio defense, which is like the predecessor of that cover three, cover six, cover nine type defense that we run. So it's a good hire. Still the most intriguing thing to me is what the hell is going on with Brandon Staley. He is still hanging around. Again, there has been no news. You know, 49er Web Zone, you know, speculated that he was going to be let go, but the 49ers website does not have anything. All the Brian Snyder, you know, personnel move, the Saleh hire, the Boyer hire, the Bradley hire, all those guys are on the coaching org chart. Brandon Staley is still there, and there's nothing, no press release saying that he's been released. So it leads me to believe he's still here.
They should have a picture of Brandon Staley hugging Kyle with the same look as Kendrick from last night. Just like, I got you guys. Like, I got, okay.
And maybe that's just it. Kyle, he's a good hang, and Kyle just wants to likes having him around.
I think the theory is that Kellen Moore is going to take over the New Orleans job, but Kellen Moore could not do anything until the Super Bowl was over. And Kellen Moore may be taking Brandon Staley. So thus they had to wait until the Super Bowl's over before they could make that move. That's the theory that I've been hearing, that maybe Staley goes and helps run that defense for Kellen Moore.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. I hadn't heard anything about it. I keep Googling Brandon Staley news, and I haven't seen anything, but I guess rumors aren't news. So maybe that's it. I'm out of the loop, and he'll be off of the, it would make me feel so much better for him to be off of the website. Cause is he just hanging out, or, I mean, what? It's the darndest thing. Cause it doesn't make any sense. It didn't make any sense once they hired Saleh. And now it really doesn't make any sense that it's Saleh and Bradley, but Bradley makes a lot of sense to your point several weeks ago that maybe the person behind Saleh is a coordinator in waiting,
right?
Which would make sense.
I think you must have muted it or something. Did you mute your mic on accident? Oh. There you go.
Dropped it and muted it. But the Saleh is a one and done probably. And you could do a lot worse than having somebody like Gus Bradley waiting in the rings. And number two, they've had a lot of losses on the coaching staff in the past several years, and you just replenish the brain trust there is it's a smart move.
Yeah. Okay, so what about Kendrick? Did you like the performance?
I loved it. I knew from the jump that it wasn't going to be for everybody.
Absolutely.
And when I say everybody, middle America.
Well, you can there's probably a high correlation to anybody who follows the Twitter account End Wokeness probably didn't like Kendrick.
I thought it was great, and there were, you know, I caught a lot of them, you know, at the time, but there were a lot of subliminals that I loved. Like, you know, seeing Serena was just
that was like, awesome.
That stopped the show for me. I mean, and I know some people just don't know about her and Drake's relationship, which just made her dancing to those diss tracks was just such a inside moment that it was great. It was a great performance, though. I thought just overall.
We saw my wife and I, we like to support at any point just going to the movies to see comedies because, like, there's no comedies that hit the theaters anymore. So we went to see Kiki Palmer and SZA in one of them days. It was like a throwback to the 90s Friday, you know, How to Be a Player, the Def Jam movie. Kind of, what was the other one? With Ice Cube and Jamie Foxx was the DJ. Ernie Mac was the OG DJ. Whatever that movie was.
Players Club.
Players Club. It was an ode, was a throwback to those. And one of our favorites is Issa Rae. And Issa Rae was behind that movie, too. So when I saw SZA, I was like, man, this woman goes from being a top recording artist. And she has two really good albums. First one, I would say, was a great album. To then, I just see her in the movies like a couple weeks ago, and now she's at the Super Bowl singing, you know, the Luther Vandross song with Kendrick. I thought that whole thing was great. I'm actually surprised that, and this was the thing with the Grammys too, he won Record of the Year with a song that basically called Drake a pedophile. And I was like, if people listen to these lyrics, how can they vote for this song? And I just assumed that maybe they didn't listen to the lyrics. And Kendrick got away with doing the same thing at the Super Bowl. That he did not use that word, but he did get the "Hey Drake, I hear you like 'em young" line right in that song, and had that entire stadium chanting song in A minor. Like, oh my God, how?
That is awesome.
How did you get away with that? That's insane. Anyway, all right, last thing that I wanted to chat about, there's a quote. I'm gonna give you the quote before I even tell you who it is. You may be able to figure it out. Okay, here it is. If you truly watch the tape and you watch all the other elite quarterbacks in this league, there's a common thread amongst all of them. The fact that they're able to process the game at such a high level, able to create plays with their feet, and make the high-level throws up and down the field. Brock Purdy does all of these things, and he was in the MVP conversation a year ago. Let's not forget that he took us to a Super Bowl, and he gave us the lead before, obviously, Patrick Mahomes and them took it away from us. Everybody out there, if you have any questions about Brock Purdy, I'm here to tell you, I'm not biased. I know ball. He's the guy.
I got a couple guesses, but tell me.
Fred Warner.
Okay, yeah, that was my second guess.
I would have said George or Fred if I had, but Fred Warner was on Super Bowl row, and he was doing some stuff, you know, some media and such, and I thought it was important. Not just like, who cares about the fans? Who cares about the expectation? Who cares about the carnival barkers with the microphone? Like, those are the people. The only reason you care about them is because they are shaping narratives. Now, sometimes they're shaping narratives to non-educated fans, I would say. But what that quote said to me, I think meant a lot more probably in that locker room than anything else. And if Fred truly believes that, who's the guy that anybody in that locker room is going to listen to most? There's a few, but he's got to be, like, if he's not one, he's like 1A. And so to have him say that about his guy, man, I thought that spoke volumes. And I was just like, man, I'm ready to watch them play right now. Like, when's the next game going to start?
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I'll say about that is I'm sure he believes it. Teammates aren't the most reliable narrators, though. You know, I mean, what is he gonna say? What did they say about Jimmy? I mean, when he was, you know, so, I mean,
they just said that he was handsome.
I think that Brock is a good football player. To me, the jury is still out on as the talent around him declines, because I believe it's not gonna. I'm not breaking news here when I say that 10 years down the road, or whenever Brock's career is over, these last two or three seasons will go down as the most talented teams, most talented offenses he ever played on. I can't imagine him having more talented teammates than the ones he's had the past, two and a half, three years. So the question is going to be, does his game elevate as the talent around him invariably decreases? Because once George is gone, once Christian is gone, you know, they will replace them and hopefully they'll be good players. But you're not going to tell me you're going to bring in another Christian McCaffrey. I mean, it's highly unlikely. Another George Kittle? Come on. I mean, these guys are, I believe, going to go down as
some of the greatest Niners ever.
Yeah, I think already, no disrespect to my man Frank Gore, I think that Christian McCaffrey is the most talented running back I've ever seen in a 49er jersey. He's just so good. And George Kittle, no disrespect to Vernon Davis, George Kittle is the gold standard.
Brent Jones just popped his head out.
Sorry about that. Except for Brent Jones.
And Vern, both of them.
He is, when I think of 49er tight ends now, George Kittle is going to be the first one I come to. And it's at no fault of Brock. It's just so, and I'm not saying he can't, but his game will have to elevate, which, again, 3 years in, he can. He's not going to get taller. He's not going to get stronger. His arm's not going to get any stronger, but he can learn to process better. He can learn to, not to say that he doesn't do it well now, but you see those guys as they get older. Guys like, I'm not comparing them to Peyton Manning or Tom Brady or those guys like that, but you saw as they got older, Brett Favre, as they got older, they were able to, they'd seen it all. So they were able to anticipate, knew what this guy was going to happen when those guys were in those coverages and what his answers were. And I fully expect for Brock to be one of those guys as he is in his fifth and sixth and seventh year, that he'll be able to diagnose what's happening and see what's going to happen before it happens. And so there are places where he can grow in his game. And now the question is, once he does that, is it enough to take maybe less talented teams even further? I don't know that he's ever going to be, you know, like a Patrick Mahomes I believe he hasn't done it yet, but I think Joe Burrow is one of those guys who is an elevator. He can carry teams. Mm-hmm. We saw it in college, and he's just that guy. He's one of those guys. I think Josh Allen is one of those guys with his combination of talent and physical ability.
We saw it with Stafford.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Stafford is a great example that when you put him in the right situation, he can carry a team. Now, you know, again, he's one of those guys, kind of like Josh, that can throw you out of games, like Brett Favre was, who could throw you out of games, but they damn sure could throw you. You get Matt Stafford is one of those guys. That is perfect. He's a perfect example. Matt Stafford gets on a heater. He's one of the best quarterbacks, you know, of his generation when he gets on a heater. But then he'll you know, make crazy decisions. But I think Brock can be that kind of player that when he is right, again, that was the thing I said about the contract. What I can tell you, what I know about Brock Purdy after 3 years already is that at his best, his ceiling, he can play as well as anybody. But at his floor, I can't remember in 3 years very many games where Brock threw us out of games, mm-hmm. that he's lost games for us. So you take that and you say, how many quarterbacks, when you talk about wanting to pay him, how many quarterbacks with that profile ever hit free agency? And how many guys in the draft do you say, I know that profile about them, that they are good enough to be one of the best, and at worst, they're not going to lose games for you. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many you look at today, this year's draft. Now, granted, you said it's a weaker draft. I can't say that with a surety about Cam or Shadur or Jackson Dart. So I say all that to say that you pay Brock. You have to pay him.
Yeah,
because from what he's shown us, is he one of the best quarterbacks in the league? No. But you don't have to be to get that big money. You know, Danny Dimes got come on, man.
Okay,
I had somebody tell me that they shouldn't pay Brock and we should sign Daniel Jones. Get out of here. What are you talking about?
Okay, so here's why I like Fred's quote and why I think it is maybe more meaningful than, you know, a random. He didn't say Brock's my dog. He actually was very eloquently explained what a high level quarterback does and what he believes Brock can also do. So what it tells me is that he has thought about this, and Fred is a smart guy. He's an eloquent guy. I would not expect anything less from him, but there are other scenarios where maybe if he didn't believe it, he could have done the whole Brock's my dog thing, or yeah, Brock's, you know, Brock's keeps us in ball game or whatever, however else you want to say it. So I like that because Fred is a leader, and Fred showed, you know, that, yeah, did my homework on my own guy because I knew I was going to be asked this question. What else are they going to ask me about our 6-11 season? And so that's why I liked his answer. So I just thought that he stuff like a, that, I think.
He's a real good leader, and he is, you know, he is, like you say, at this point now, the spokesman of the team, which is important because I think we will discuss as this moves on is that I'm at a point not only with the talent, but with the leadership aspect of this team. You know, we lost AA last year. Now it's possible that we lose, you know, Dre and Huff this year. Where are these leaders stepping up from? Again, I get, you know, I can't see, or none of us can see. We're not in the locker room every day, but those are guys that you hear people talking about are leaders in that locker room for sure. And as you lose them, you know, you lose something when those guys are gone. And it's hard to replace that because, you know, it's hard for a guy to come in. I don't know any of us who work jobs. It's hard for you to come in as the new guy and then also be leader guy immediately. That's something that kind of, unless you are kind of known for that, like, I know, just a crazy, if Ray Lewis were to come into your locker room as a free agent, obviously he would probably have some cachet as a leader with his emotional speeches and whatnot, but yeah,
smelling like deer antler spray at the same time.
Yeah, but it's hard for that. I remember even in his press conference, Malik Collins addressed that directly, is that he didn't know that he would be able to come in and replace, you know, Eric Armstead
sure.
as a leader. But, you know, you come in and you do the best you can to help the team win, because you can't. You're not going to replace that dude in terms of that. After, you know, he's been there his whole career and whatnot. But so that's something that I think we should keep an eye out on as we start to lose these guys who have meant a lot to the culture mm-hmm. of the 49ers over the last several years. It's something just to bear that bears watching, I think.
All right, before we get out of here, just want to plug We Want Winners. That's our show. The Death Lineup. Brian and I are going to have a special guest specifically on the WNBA side. If people, new fans especially, as the Valkyries are coming into play, may know who this person is if they're trying to catch up on their WNBA knowledge. I'm not going to name the person yet, just in case it falls through. But so we'll be back on Thursday. Episode may go up Thursday, maybe Friday, unsure. But I just want to make sure that. And I also wanted to get your quick thoughts on Jimmy Butler.
I like the results so far. Obviously, I as I mentioned, I was kind of dozing in and out, but I had the game on. And the thing that I noticed, you know, that sticks out to me is that, you know, he really is like a free throw magnet. He mm-hmm. like gets fouled a lot. And that is something that we really, you know, I don't know what the statistics are, but I don't think we shoot very many free throws as a team.
No, like one of the worst in the league.
Oh, really? I didn't know yeah. that. But yeah, it was because the last two games, it's been really noticeable.
Yeah.
So that's good. And I mean, you know, Jimmy's always good, you know, early on, you know, so I wouldn't expect any less of him.
Honeymoon. He's good yeah, with the honeymoons.
Exactly. Exactly. So I don't know what it does for. And I think we are definitely a better team than we were without him. I miss Wiggs. Wiggs is a good player. Guy. Yeah. But yeah. And I'm going to miss him, but you know, it's not Luca, but,
but, are you going to be doing any hanging out this weekend with the All-Star?
I'm going to try to see what I can get into. Yeah. I'm definitely going to go over there. I think to the Coliseum on Saturday, but, yeah,
right? They're doing practice.
Yeah, I'm looking. Okay. Yeah, I'm looking forward to being in an all-star city that's not Las Vegas. That'll be very, very interesting.
Yeah, no, that'll be fun. Yeah, we're gonna be around the city on Saturday for sure. All right, so that is it from here. And like I said, Death Lineup will be sometime this week. With a new episode, and we'll be talking Jimmy, we'll be talking Valkyries, and yeah, it's a good time for the NBA, because the NFL is finally over and the NBA gets to kind of do their thing for a little while, and then, you know, baseball's coming in a month and a half. So I just wanted to shout out to people who are in the chat. Rick, of course, our guy Rick Feinberg was hanging out in the chat. We had Papa J. We had Caleb Daniels, who just randomly wanted me to ask you your thoughts on ex-49ers fullback Moran Norris.
That's a name I haven't heard in a long time. I don't have any comments on you. No, that was awesome. Who was that? Caleb Daniels?
Caleb Daniels, yeah.
All right, Caleb, that was a good one. You got me. I'm stumped. I normally am able to come up with something, but yeah, I've got nothing.
He's going back to the early days of We Want Winners.
That's awesome. Oh, I was just trying to figure out some kind of prize I could send you for that. That was great. I saw Papa J and Rick making some very interesting. I can't multitask and read the comments the way most can, like professionals can. But yeah, I saw Papa J had a real, I can't remember what it was now, a real insightful comment.
It was about the age of the team.
Yes. Thank you very much for being here. RF is always a pleasure.
And then Potent Potables as well, and our guy Big Leo as well. So shout out to all of you. But yeah, so we'll be back at some point during this offseason. We'll probably be talking draft. I know Rod's studying. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to catch up. I'm going to have to do my studying now. But we'll be back at some point talking more Niners football and hopefully getting really knowledgeable about this upcoming draft because it's an important one. All right. For Rod, I am Double G. We will see you when we see you. Peace out.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger. And future stronger you can get started now by saving $28 or more when you join today. You in? We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need to keep stepping it up. And free fitness training to help you mix up your routine. Plus, most clubs are open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more. Just $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends February 28th. See Home Club for details.